and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 244, and I am your host, James Gilmore. Joining me today for this week's episode is none other than Peter Willington.
Hi!
Hello, Peter. ¿Cómo estás?
What did you just say to me?
I think I said something Spanish in the least Spanish accent a person could possibly do.
Okay, then I am Beaucoup.
That's French. Never mind. Good. Glad to hear it. Fantastic. Oh, my word. It's been a bit of a weird week so far. It's been a gloomy weather outside, so it's been a bit cold and a bit dry. But in the iOS world, oh, it's been hot. Hot, Peter. Scandals.
It's so scorching hot that you've gone crazy.
Heatstroke.
So, from heatstroke, what about... So it's hot in iOS world.
Yeah.
What about Android world?
It's temperate, I would say.
Right. What about Engage world?
Humid.
Oh dear.
To the point where there's so much moisture that the thing just breaks and you know the little screen fails and you can't play that crap skateboard game anymore.
Oh, I so loved it.
I know you did. Never mind. But yeah, we've got lots and lots of exciting things for you this week. Things such as Cut the Rope. Cut the Rope 2? Oh my god, it might be coming. It probably is. We'll tell you about that. There's real, proper, actual scandal between Apple, EA, and PopCap regarding Plants vs. Zombies 2. Did they pay the massive amounts of money to not release it on Android? And also, Tesco done a tablet.
Oh god, I'm so excited.
I know, but updates first. Right, first up this week, a couple of slices of Android news for your plate. We have just heard that Clash of Clans, that very, very popular big old army-type world-building, city-building, defending thing. You can tell I haven't played it much, but I know you have, Peter.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, excellent. It's been on iOS for ages, and it's done incredibly well for Supercell. It's made them a hell of a lot of money. And by the looks of things, they're about to make a massive chunk more. Clash of Clans is now in beta on Android.
Whoa.
I know. We're not sure how you can actually get into the beta. It's a limited beta at the moment, and they haven't given us information how you can apply for it, because we've had some interest. People have been going, but I want in. You're going to have to wait. But it does mean that obviously it will be coming to Android at a later date, a couple of months down the line, I expect. Which is very good news for Android fans if you like that kind of real-time management, resource management thing, which I know a lot of people on the site do, and you yourself, and John got kind of obsessed with it at one point.
Yeah, no, I mean, I bow down to John. John absolutely, he went deep. He put a couple of hundred quid into it in the end?
Yeah, I think he wound up in triple figures. It was quite impressive.
But it's funny that they're thinking about doing this now, or they are doing this now, because there's just been, I've just reviewed, like, over the last fortnight, two back-to-back games that are basically just, hey, we sort of made Clash of Clans again, and we're on Android as well.
I saw this. I actually saw that Mark was looking into a feature where we just downloaded a whole bunch of games that are clearly sort of playing on the Clash of Clans formula, and it's hilarious just to look at the little thumbnails on the iOS devices that we've got on the iPad, because it's just like a load of dudes with massive heads. Everyone's just copied that and used that as a template, so it's these kind of five clones that are sitting on the company iOS drive, and you're like going litigation methinks, but you won't have to do that anymore. You don't have to go for the imitations. Why waste your time on the rest when you can try the best? Apparently, so I don't really play it. So keep your eyes peeled for that, and also we will update you when we know how to get into the beta. If you want in on Android, we will find out for you. Also coming to Android is real-time strategy game Autumn Dynasty, which is actually out right now.
What is this?
Well, this is one of those, I think it's an isometric hexagonal kind of real-time strategy. It's actually good. I did play this one when it came out on iOS, and it's kind of set in feudal China, and I don't think it's from the Total War guys. I'm not sure if it was that one or not, but I do know that it was actually enjoyable. It's a proper kind of old-fashioned, it's all drawn off as if it's done on kind of papyrus. The art style is very painted, almost Okami-like. And it looks great, and it actually works really very well. So you're kind of commanding, trying to save the Autumn Empire from civil war. So you're doing your usual RTS stuff of guiding an army around, training units, constructing buildings, researching upgrades, all that lovely stuff. There aren't any in-app purchases at all, you might be pleased to hear. And it'll cost you £3.11, or I guess around $4, I suppose, to get from the Google Play Store right now. Also, savings-wise, let's go to iOS. Cine Mora, which is a game that I really liked on iOS, and I told you to get, in fact, which you definitely did. Played it yet?
No.
It's in, on your pile of shame, is it?
It's that pile of shame is teetering at the moment. I started yesterday, so 2 days ago when you're listening to this, listeners, I started a game that I got for Christmas last year. Yeah, 2 days ago. Like, literally unwrapped it.
Oh, yeah.
This is how far behind I am.
This is the illusion about getting into the games industry. Everyone thinks you'll play more games, and if you follow anyone on Twitter or you listen to any of us, you realize you wind up playing less, because you end up playing the first, like, 5 minutes of lots and lots and lots of games for coverage. But as, in terms of actually getting in and completing them, you're too busy.
So with PG, obviously we're just mobile and portables. Like, we're not multi-platform in that sort of a sense. Like, the number of home console games I've played this year are minimal. I must be able to count it on like two hands. Like,
yeah, I'm kind of the same. This month I bought The Last of Us and GTA 5. And those are the first two console games I've bought for myself in months, just because I just haven't had the time to go and sit down with it. It's fantastic experience I'm having at the moment, though, because those are two, you know, impressive, top-tier, high-quality games. And it's a really nice, I'm just jumping between the two of them going, oh, this is brilliant. Same drop discs. Oh, no, this is brilliant as well. Oh, it's nice to be reminded. But enough of console nonsense. Cine Mora, it's a side-scrolling... actually, it is linked to consoles, I lie, because it originally came out on Xbox Live. But it's a side-scrolling bullet hell shooter with absolutely gorgeous graphics. It's got these lovely parts where the ship kind of flies out of the screen and does 3D swoop arounds. The only issue was the controls. It was a floating joystick the first time out, and it didn't transfer quite as well. But they updated it later to add the one-to-one kind of drag your finger around the screen controls, which was a bit of an improvement. But it's a beautiful game. It usually costs around £3 or £4, I think. It's down to £1.99 or $2.99 at the moment. And for that price, I would really suggest you get it. It is a proper high-class quality title, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. And Peter, play it.
All right.
PG Podcast fans will know that I like a bit of Cut the Rope. It's one of those games that I always feel exemplifies touchscreen gaming. It shows you what you can do if you design a game with the touchscreen in mind, rather than just trying to drag a console title and then try and fit a load of face buttons, cram them all on the screen so your fingers, your big fat thumbs, and they all step all over each other and you mispress and then you die and all that. Cut the Rope is a game that is through and through a touchscreen experience, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We've had a bunch of sequels so far, kind of quasi-sequels. So you had Cut the Rope, then you had Cut the Rope Experiments, and you have Cut the Rope Time Travel most recently, where Amnon goes back into the past and puts on a toga, or looks like a caveman and looks a bit thick. But we haven't had the true sequel confirmed. Until now, literally this very morning, Zep2Lab, the Russian developer responsible, has just confirmed that Cut the Rope 2 is coming. Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness, mate. Do you know how many games this week have there been where the originals of, like original, totally awesome mobile games that were kind of like, they totally changed the mobile games landscape. And they've had, like, sequels announced, like Plants vs. Zombies, Peggle, Cut the Rope.
Infinity Blade 3 was last
Infinity
week.
Infinity Blade. Yeah, like, they're, like, all of these really, really... like, games you would point to and go, that's mobile phone gaming.
Yeah, yeah. The Uber, like, franchises.
Yeah.
Well, the Russian developer has promised more characters, more twists on the gameplay, and apparently a captivating new story.
Good. It was captivating the first time around.
Well, I like the character was good. I wasn't necessarily, like, immersed in the deep narrative.
Oh, I was. Have you read my Omnom fan fiction?
Your slash fic of Omnom.
It's pretty gross, I'll be honest with you.
It's pretty raunch, I suppose.
Yeah, it is.
Ew. No, but yeah, apparently, according to Zep2Lab, they remain dedicated to their mission of examining the science of fun.
That's a direct quote. That doesn't sound like fun. That sounds like science. That sounds like homework.
Making it hard work. But what they're saying, their PR suggests it's going to be a massive leap forward for the game. I'm quoting. Amazing graphics, gameplay, characters, blah, 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 blah. All the usual stuff people say in press releases to hype their game. A proper true sequel is coming. Obviously, I'm very excited for that. Almost as interesting are the stats for the downloads for the original Cut the Rope. Apparently, Cut the Rope has been downloaded more than 415 million times since its release, and it currently, at this very moment, is being downloaded 5 times a second.
Do you know, I talking about crazy stats, right? So five downloads a second. Yeah. That is genuinely incredible.
Mm.
But there's a statistic out there, and I heard this the other day, that Lego sell 7 toys every second.
Ooh. Ooh, really?
Yeah, 7 toys every second.
It's nice to think that it's still that popular. I always think it's that the kids today wouldn't necessarily be interested.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they got their Minecraft.
I know. I can't believe I just said the sentence "the kids today."
I know. Come on, Grant. But bring it on back to Cut the Rope. Like, I do like it when companies bring out these kinds of stats. When you're playing mobile games and portable games, that kind of a thing, they're generally quite a solitary experience, and we see them as highly personal. I think that's why people get so invested. But stats like this just remind us that, like, this is being appreciated. Like, the level one of the original Cut the Rope, you know, think about how many times that's been played now. Like, think about how many people and how many different walks of life have done that first. Like stuff like that makes me really excited.
It makes you kind of excited to be involved in this, to be a part of the mobile gaming thing. It's been sneered at for so long by so many people, and there's still detractors to this day who do that. Oh, it's not proper gaming, etc. But it's just operating on such a massive scale. I did see a chart the other day which showed kind of the uptake of consoles versus the uptake of mobile gaming, and it's obviously mobiles are trouncing consoles in that sense at the moment. And people are saying that now with the next generation, the PS4 and the Xbox One, which obviously I'm looking forward to, you know, as much. I love console gaming as well, don't get me wrong. I'm not taking nothing away from it, but people are just saying now that, oh, you know, it's been stagnating for a while and now it's getting exciting. It's like it's been exciting in mobile games for the past 3 years. It's been brilliant. It's been growing and growing and growing, and, you know, innovation and all that good stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the, you know, all of the conversations that are going on in the home console space at the moment are things like looking forward to the next big leap in technology. But like, for us, that's every year.
Yeah, it iterates so quickly. And well, we're very excited. I'm very excited for Cut the Rope 2. We don't have a release date yet, but I imagine more details will be coming pretty quickly. So as we know...
Is it going to be...
Is it going to be free and free to say? I don't know. I'll have to see how they do it. If there's an energy system, I may throw my toys out the pram.
Yeah.
You have been warned, Zeptulab. Actually, I don't know. I've heard a lot of good stuff from Zeptulab, like, the stuff they say about not wanting to become an Uber super company, they always said that they're not trying to be Rovio. They're a smallish studio comparatively. They don't have a load of, like, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of staff. And they're not interested in blowing up and being a Disney-style franchise. They're just a sort of focused company that wants to make good games. So if anyone's going to shirk the tendency to do horrible, nasty freemium implementation, it could be them. So, I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'd be totally cool with them doing something freemium. I just think...
They've got to do it right,
because this is one that they could seriously balls up, basically. Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of massive franchises that went free-to-play, Plants vs. Zombies 2. It's about time. Okay, so, as we all know, Plants vs. Zombies 2, It's About Time, the sequel, A, went free-to-play, but B, it came out on iOS exclusively.
Yes.
Now, that's understandable. You know, it came out on iOS, came out on PCs in the first place, didn't it? And then came to iOS?
I can't remember the timeline. I think that's right, yeah.
But it was a while before I got involved. Anyway, with the release of the second one, it came out on iOS exclusively. According to Giant Bomb, the website, there may be a very good reason for that. And that reason is several fat stacks of cash.
Oh, wow.
According to Giant Bomb, EA's Frank Gibeau, how do you pronounce that name? Gibeau. I'm going to say Frank. EA's Frank Gibeau told a team at the publisher at EA that Apple gave it, quote, a truckload of money, wow, end quote, to delay the Android version of Plants vs. Zombies.
Hmm.
Now, allegedly.
Right, yes.
If anyone legal is listening, this is allegedly. And in fact, there's been a follow-up to this, because obviously we covered this story, a bunch of other people covered this story as well. Does that sound like a plausible thing to you?
Right, so absolutely, because this stuff is being treated more and more like the traditional console space now. Like, whereas, you know, I would say a couple of years ago it was pretty free and easy in terms of mobile games coverage, that sort of thing was pretty like easygoing. You kind of just bought the games or you just asked and got a code because very few people were sort of talking about stuff. Mm. Now coverage is getting a little bit more cagey, and people are like, not to sound too sour, but the Knights of the Old Republic thing, right? Yeah. Like, you know, the fact that that was an exclusive reveal through a review, like, that's a little bit more towards the console end of things now.
Yeah, the traditional format where they offer exclusives to specific sites.
Exactly.
And they try as much as they can to nail down exclusives to specific platforms.
And there's nothing really stopping Apple to turn up, to, you know, going up to EA and saying, look, we think this is probably going to make some money. It would be good to have the exclusive on this one for a bit. You know, and by delaying the release on Android, it perpetuates this increasingly untrue myth that Android is always second. You know, a lot of Android games, a lot of games at the moment are now coming out day and date, Android and iOS. And it, where I was starting to think, well, maybe I should just get an iPad so that I've always got an iOS device and I can get an Android phone or whatever, because I want to have the games early.
Yeah.
As soon as you get that parity, you think, well, why am I spending all this money on an Apple device when I could get an S4? Or whatever, like some top-end Android device.
Yeah, and so, more and more now, the Android devices are considerably more powerful than some of the other ones.
Exactly. And so I think, you know, it's possible that this is absolutely true.
Well, there was a lot of fallout from this comment. So first of all, Apple jumped on, and Apple, who are notoriously tight-lipped and don't respond or say anything to anyone, they described the content of the Giant Bomb piece as, quote, not true. So there you go. That's a simple flat-out no from Apple. EA actually contacted us, Pocket Gamer, after we published the story to offer a statement. What they said was, quote, a comment from an internal meeting taken out of context has created an unfortunate misunderstanding. Reports of a paid relationship between Apple and EA are factually inaccurate. And we apologize for any confusion.
Well, now, the wording of that is very interesting, because as somebody who has worked in PR before...
On the dark side.
On the dark side in music PR before, if you look at that last sentence, that's very easy to wiggle out of basically any situation. Because if somebody says, reports of a paid relationship between Apple and EA are factually inaccurate, you could say that the initial conversation of... Apple gave them a truckload of money. You could say, well, that's factually inaccurate. It wasn't a truck. It was a bus. You know,
like,
you
know, exactly.
There's all sorts of little ways that you can wiggle out of things. And this doesn't straight up say, no, Apple didn't give us any money for this whatsoever. It says that reports were factually inaccurate.
And that the comment itself was taken out of context, which suggests that the comment itself was spoken. Someone did say the phrase, a truckload of money, and they're saying it's been taken out of context. Now, I'm interested to see what context you could put that quote in where it doesn't mean Apple paid a lot of money. I don't know. But like I say, this is all alleged, and clearly EA and Apple are denying it strongly. So, you know, you can only speculate.
I don't know why, though. Like, why be so like, oh, no. Like,
it would make sense, and I guess it would make sense for Apple to be like, well, no, we wanted it first, so we secured the exclusive. I mean, it happens, we were talking about consoles earlier. There's a reason, like, things like The Last of Us is an exclusive to the PlayStation, and Sony are very happy to have that, and they're very keen to publicize its exclusivity, and I'm sure it's because they either Naughty Dog are very fond of working on the platform, or there was a mutually beneficial financial arrangement between them.
I think it's probably the second one.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's a mixture of both. I mean, Bungie jumped ship, didn't they, where they did Halo Halo from Microsoft for so long, and now they've gone over to the PS4 for Destiny, haven't they? And now they're working exclusively with Sony.
Multi-format, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. So you go where the offer is best. I mean, it's just common sense business, isn't it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I guess I don't know if it is true. I guess I don't know why they're denying it. Mm. Maybe there's reasons, but. Yeah.
Maybe it's just the wording. Maybe it sounds a bit like
a little bit suspect. Like Apple were like worried.
Yeah. It does sound a bit like sort of dodgy dealings, doesn't it? Truckload of cash, you slaves. Mm. Anyway, regardless of this, whether it's true or whether it's not true, what we do know is that Plants vs Zombies 2 will be coming out on Android sometime in the next few weeks.
Oh, do you know what? Do you know what I would really like?
What's that?
I would really like the ability to buy an Android tablet and for it to come pre-installed with a little button that opened up the Tesco website.
Wow, well, your extremely specific wish has just been granted, Peter.
Wow!
My God, yeah, this week, I mean, it was announced late last week, I think, and it came out this week, or is at least, you know, available in the next few days. Bizarre announcement, caught us slightly off guard. Tesco's launched its own branded tablet.
So Tesco is...
Tesco is the supermarket. If you're an American listener, you know, it's our kind of Walmart. Over here, Walmart is Asda, incidentally. We do have Walmart in its own, you know...
Do we?
Yeah, Asda's part of Walmart.
No.
Yeah, Asda's the UK branch of Walmart.
Ooh.
Yeah. But there's another supermarket as well called Tesco. And just this week, they have announced and revealed their brand new branded Android tablet.
Mm.
Now, this is noteworthy for a few reasons. A, obviously, it's going with the Tesco branding. So it's using the basic Android Jelly Bean, like, was it 4.2 we're at now?
4.2, yeah.
Yeah, which means they're not doing one of those Touch Sense, Touch Wiz overlay skins they put on top of
things.
Thank
God.
I know, like Samsung does its Touch Wiz where it lays an interface over the top of the native operating system. It's not doing that. It's just giving you kind of Nexus-style pure Android, which is great. That's great news. It's throwing its own little Tesco button in there, obviously. So you can press Tesco and it'll take you to like the Tesco website so you can do your shopping and whatever else. I think it also directs you to its video streaming service as well. So you can do that straight through the tablet. Other than that, it's basically just pure Android. Now, what makes it really interesting are the specs and the price.
Yeah,
so
it does.
It's called the Huddle, H-U-D-L, which is a crap name, frankly.
I don't like it.
I don't understand whether it's supposed to sound like huddle, as in let's all get in a huddle around our device.
Keith isn't here, that logo...
Yeah, leaves something to be desired. And it's available in a bunch of colours, none of which are particularly fetching.
Mm.
However, like before we start picking on it, it's got a 7-inch display, which is 1440 by 900 pixels. So that's 243 pixels per inch. So it's pretty good high-def screen.
Yeah.
Putting it on a par with something like the Nexus 7. In fact, I think it might be... I'm not sure if that's a better screen than the Nexus 7. I seem to remember the Nexus 7 was 1280 at last count. I don't know, I'm not sure. But either way, it's got 16 gigabytes of storage space, which can be expanded. And it's got a 1.5 gigahertz quad core, which is not top of the range, but pretty good. Not bad.
But it's not... Yeah, like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it puts it on a par with something like the Nexus 7. I think the new model Nexus 7 might beat it to the post a little bit. But it's the price that was eye-catching. The Nexus 7, you're looking at paying £199 for, or £220 or something. I think the lowest you could get it for ever was £159 when they launched it. This, Tesco's Huddle, costs £119.
And that means I'm buying one.
That really, really is a bargain, considering the specs, and which are, you know, fairly decent, like not top of the range, but perfectly adequate specs. When you put that in comparison with the price, they're really good specs.
Well, okay, so for £120, right, which is to American listeners, what, $200?
Yeah, like, I guess $200.
About $200.
Yeah.
Not that you're getting one, but you know, £120, $200 for a device that will run Real Racing 3 and it will run Anomaly 2 when it comes out.
Yeah.
And it will, you know, it will run all of these games and it will do all of your games for the next 2 or 3 years. But more importantly, it's a device that you can, and I think there's a picture on the website, actually, on our website, of like a really hard case for it.
Yes,
you know,
there is.
You know, this is a device that you chuck your child and go, there you go, like, this is modernity. Like, you know.
This is modernity. Like, welcome to the future, son. Come and touch the screen with me. Like,
my sister has two kids, and they're lovely, but they are small. And because they are small, they are stupid, right? They are ridiculous. And, right. Like, whenever she hands her iPhone to them, I just wince. And I go, oh, God, what are you doing? Like, one of these... 120 quid with a nice little case on it that means that, you know, little Liam and Jessica can throw it around the walls, like, and not be too worried about it. You know, this means that they can play their, you know, their Cut the Ropes and Jetpack Joyride is a favorite of Liam's.
Okay.
Like, this is a bargain.
It really properly is.
And like I was thinking about this, I'm strongly considering taking a look at the accessories. I'm waiting to look for all the accessories to be announced, because if they do a case with a keyboard inside of it, like a Bluetooth keyboard, I might just get that and spend a few quid on an office program and basically get to leave my laptop at home, because, you know, it'll be a really lightweight, very flexible device. I don't need it to do anything else except for type up documents and keep it protected, and a case with a keyboard in it will do that. Like, when they announced it, I thought, ha 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 ha, Tesco, ridiculous, I bet it's got branding all over it. And I looked at it and went, well, you know, the colours aren't brilliant, but...
The colours aren't great, and the bezel around the edge is kind of big.
It's kind of big, but chuck it in a case, and I've got myself basically 120 quid's worth of all-purpose device.
And if you got it from anywhere else, it would cost you at least 200, really.
Yeah, exactly.
For those specs. It's really quite striking. So, I mean, granted, Tesco's a huge company and it possibly able to undercut. I can't believe that they're selling it at a profit. Well, they might be selling it at cost. I don't know. But what I want to see...
It's all services, right? Like, that'll be their thing.
I will be interested to see what the feedback is after people have used it for a while. Because at this price, that's the only concern. It's like, are bits going to start failing inside it?
I watched a video, kind of like a demonstration of it from, I think it was Engadget, props to Engadget, and they went hands on with it, and they said it was, you know, all right, like, built fine, you know. And I think, like, for 120 quid, like, I agree with you, it is one of those things of, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. But I think maybe this services angle is exactly what they're going for. They're selling it at maybe a slight loss, but, you know, it gets people into their ecosystem, and, you know, they're offering stuff like, I think there's free access to, like, Tesco TV or something along those lines.
You can get a club card TV service, that's right, which gives you TV shows and movies. And you can also get extra points, Peter, extra club card points.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I'm seriously considering buying one of these. And, like, here's the other thing, and I know I'm going on about this, but... So we've got the line here. Tesco club card owners can double up their points and potentially bring the price down to 60 quid.
Yeah.
Like, 60 quid for a very good tablet.
That's pretty impressive. It's hard to ignore.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Well, we're going to review it, obviously. We'll get our hands on one in the coming days. I think it's out on September 30th. So 4 days, 3 days to wait as you listen to this, I expect. We'll get our hands on it. We'll review it, and we'll give you the skinny and tell you if it is indeed too good to be true. Before we find out what's out and about this week, however, Peter, I believe you had a few messages to deliver to the Pocket Gaming Podcast audience.
Hello, yes. The bosses would like you all to know about some things. So Steel Media Publishing does guides, and we publish them on iTunes, so you can download them and read them on your iPad, and they're lovely, and they've got all fancy pants moving bits. I've talked about them before, listener. Come on.
Well, such games as Doodle Jump and...
Doodle Jump and Galaxy on Fire and Clash of Clans. And
That was a cracker.
That was a cracker. And now... you can get the guide to The Room.
The Room, Peter. I bloody love The Room.
You did, didn't you? But you would have completed it well quicker if you would have had an iPad app. So you can get that. And there's also a guide to all of the Where's My games. So Where's My Water, Where's My Perry, and Where's My Mickey. And that's combined into one app. And I believe that's a universal app as well. So we've got stories on the website. Go and have a look at those. And then two other things. One, if you like worms... Not the insect thing. Are they insects?
The arthropods? I don't know what they are, actually.
Yeah, not them. But
very small snakes, Peter.
Yeah, the small snakes. If you like the small snakes that fire weapons, at one another in hit video game Worms, then you should take part in Gamer X, which is our sort of competition amongst the community. You download Worms 3, you come onto the website, and you tell us your top score for a specific mode, and then you can win amazing prizes. And we've sorted all that out with Team 17. They've been amazing. The scores that are coming in are incredible. So I want you guys to come along and give your score, because it would be amazing if podcast listener won. Finally, oh my goodness me. We know a lot of developers listen to this show. We have just announced Pocket Gamer Connects, which is a brand new London-based conference, and it's happening in January, and it is going to be absolutely massive. Like, so we've been working on this for a while, and it's been really difficult to keep it under wraps, basically. Like, I've had people come up to me at shows and say, hey, I've heard about this conference you're running, and I've had to be on the other end of it and go, oh, we're not talking about that.
You've had to deflect. You've had to feel like the PR person. We are not available for comment at this time.
I gave them a taste of their own medicine. anyway, so yeah, PG Connects. So if you develop games and you're in the mobile games industry, PG Connects is exactly what you want to be going to in January. It's going to connect Asia with America and Europe. Basically, a whole bunch of people are going to get into a room in a huge conference, see everybody's cool games, talk about how they get made, you know, explain what all the markets are like and the differences and the similarities, and everyone have a fun time. I'm sure there'll probably be a couple of drinks as well. I think that's it for this week. That was a lot.
That was a lot of shill. I hope you're still with us. Sorry. That's quite all right. Well, don't fret, because here are all the new games. About this week, we've got a bunch of actually really good stuff on iOS, kicking off with Trouser Heart by 10tons. 10tons have been doing pretty well recently, and this is a prime example of the high quality of their output. I've been playing this today. It is an isometric kind of room by room brawler thing where you play as a king type fellow with a big shield and a big sword and a big beard and no trousers.
Right.
Yeah, so basically a goblin comes in and nicks your pantaloons, leaving you your knees exposed to the elements and God knows what else. And it's up to you to go and fight your way through a series of environments, killing goblins and beasties and ogres and weird purple tentacles that pop up out the ground, and try to get your trousers back. It's a noble quest, if ever I heard it. And a welcome change from the damsel in distress thing, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I've been playing it, and it's really good fun. It's very simple, but it's kind of it feels big and blocky and bolshy and kind of light-hearted. So you just hack your way through the first few levels. It's dead simple, but everything feels incredibly solid. Like, it doesn't move particularly fast. You walk around the screen, and it doesn't run or anything. You just kind of trots about the screen. But it feels, as a result, kind of, I don't know, there's a lot of weight to it, and it feels chunky. And just hacking your way through the goblins, and then the barrier at the end opens up, you move over to the next room. The level's laid out so there's maybe 8 segments in a row where you just kind of go from room to room to room to room, or patch of forest to patch of forest. There's a little save point in the middle, and at the end, there's a big old boss which you fight. And it's dead simple classic stuff, but it feels really good fun. The mechanics are chunky and sound. I think Harry gave it a silver award. I think he found it a lot of fun as well. It's £1.99, $2.99. Take a look at the link that we've got on the podcast story, and have a look at the video. It's a giggle, and I reckon you'll like it if you like the old hacky-slashy dungeon crawler thing. It's good for a laugh. Also out this week, Boson X. Have you seen this one, Peter? Because this is one of the ones I'm not familiar with.
Yes, yeah, so this one is effectively sort of a third-person super hexagon esque. Well, it's an auto runner.
You see, now my ears have just pricked up there because she said super hexagon.
Oh, I was going to say if they pricked up at auto runner, I would have been like,
no.
You must get very excited.
They will do a little bit of auto runner.
Yeah,
but before that, you said super hexagon, and that gets me slightly aroused.
Yes, well, I think it gets everybody a little bit aroused. So you're basically this guy who looks like the lead character out of hit PlayStation 1 game Incredible Crisis, and
whoa.
Everyone knows that. And
this one has trousers.
He does have trousers. Running forward down what looks like a sort of a combination of Doctor Who's that kind of
time vortex, circular kind of portal,
crossed with the monolith from 2001. But a lot of them.
Yeah, I suppose so. Lots of big chunks of rectangles.
So really, more like 2011, I think it was, or 2011, the sequel? Anyway, where there's lots of monoliths. Anyway.
Oh, right, okay.
Science. So, yeah, basically it's that, and you run down things and you try not to fall off the track. That's effectively it. It's supposedly very, very simple to play. But dead hard. It's one of those, it's a game for Harry.
And potentially for me. I mean, I refuse to delete Super Hexagon from any of my devices. However much space I run out of, and I'm constantly running out of space by uploading new games to review, I refuse to remove Super Hexagon because it's still the coolest thing ever. But Mark said, if you like things like Expander or Impossible Road, that game where it's the ball going down the track, which is so hard, then this might be just the kind of thing for you. It's £1.49 or $1.99 right now. Now, I've been playing this as well. Nimblebits, I've never particularly been in their camp. Those resource management games where you sort of farm for products never really caught my attention or whatever. They've been known for things like Pocket Planes and Tiny Tower and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Here's the most recent one, Pocket Trains.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's free to download at this very moment, and as you might imagine, it's basically Pocket Planes on the ground with rails and steam and trains and that.
Well, that's all I wanted out of life.
I played it. I've been playing it today. These games work very well as pick up, play it for 10 minutes, put it down again, come back to it in 2 hours' time. That seems to be the way these games work. That's the loop of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so what you have to do is, if you played any of the other ones before, you have a bunch of trains and you have a map which shows you different locations you can send your trains to, and you're basically delivering parcels and product in between the different stations. So you load up your trains with specific cargo, and then you send one off to Paris, and then you send another one off to like Belgium, and then off they go. And it takes them a little while to get there, so this is why you pick it up, send them everyone off to their destinations, and put it down again. Then when you pick it up an hour later, they've all visited their place, they've collected money from it. That money can then be used to build more railroads, build more trains, and expand your network. That's basically the loop. That's the system. It's nicely presented. The little bits where the trains are zooming along the track looks quite nice. The music's I'm not sick of it. I mean, there's a few different songs, and it's
I'm not sick of it.
Well, no, I know that sounds like a sort of a veiled compliment, but so many of these games have these like nasty loops that go round and round and round and make you want to tear your ears out. This one, not so much at the moment. It seems to be nicely done, and I can see why other people get hooked into it. Like, and I know this was the same thing with I think Pocket Planes or a couple of the ones Nimblebit did before, where everyone's like, "Are you playing it?" Yeah. Like, are you? And then a week later, they're like, "You still playing it?" And they're like, "Yeah." And you're like, "Why?" And they go, "Not sure. I just am."
It's the same thing as Motor World Car Factory, right? Like, you get into one of them every few months, maybe, if that kind of loop is appealing to you.
Yeah, they're compulsive is the word.
Yeah.
You find yourself coming back to
them. That's right.
And I've been doing it over the course of the afternoon, and I can see it. I can see the appeal. It's nicely done. And if you like those kind of games, I think this one will please you. It's certainly just more of the same in a different format. But it looks like it could be pretty massive. It looks like there's lots to expand and lots to do. It's free to download right now. And to be fair, Nimblebit do this free-to-play thing pretty well.
Yeah,
so if you like the Pocket Planes, then this may be for you. You can get it right now for free. Also free, surprisingly free, FIFA 14, Peter.
Football.
Yeah, I know. Now, I did a video for AppSpy this week, which you can actually see on the AppSpy YouTube channel and on the site. I did a kind of hands-on, in which I was very clear about the fact that I'm not a football person. I am not a footballist, Peter.
Right, okay.
And as such, I don't know how one does a goal.
No.
Or how one is either on or offside. What's, or why what one might
what's
do.
What's your favourite team?
What's my favourite team? My favourite footballist team is the ones with the stripes
Oh, the Rovers.
Yes, the Rovers. That's right. I saw them.
I'm a City fan.
Oh, brilliant. All right. I like it when the man kicks it with his foot. And then it goes past the other men.
Oh, he scored a goal.
He done a goal. It was brilliant. So I played it for a bit. I played it for quite a while, actually, because, I got to start somewhere, I suppose. Yeah. And it was kind of all right. I sort of started to enjoy myself, weirdly. Mm. There have been a few updates this time. Now, interestingly, moving on to the 3DS for a second, the FIFA franchise has been known for iterating and iterating and not necessarily doing all that much, not making a huge leaps with every new sequel.
Sure.
In a kind of refreshing bout of honesty on EA's part, the new 3DS FIFA, so FIFA 14 on the 3DS, they basically turned around and said, yeah, it's the same game as FIFA 13.
We've
just changed the team names and transfer list.
So that story is actually even more confusing than that. So really? FIFA 14 on anything that isn't, I think, 360, PS3 and next gen,
right,
is the same but with the characters and costumes and that sort of thing changed. That's the language I understand. Characters and costumes change. But it's more complicated than it's just FIFA 13, because there's a PSP version, for example, that's coming out. There's also a PS2 version, would you believe?
Right.
But there's a PSP version coming out, and that, I believe, is based on the FIFA 2007 engine.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, like, it goes, and the 3DS one, I think, hasn't changed for a fair few years, but it was never confirmed by EA.
Okay.
So, it gets really dicey. Like, some of the additions that are coming out are very old.
However, with FIFA 14 on iOS, things are kind of quite different this time around, most notably in the area of control. So previously you've been able to do floating joysticks, so on-screen buttons, the standard thing that I'm not a huge fan of. Mm. And last time they introduced a couple of gesture controls where you can swipe your finger to do attack, all that sort of thing. This time they've implemented a full-on touchscreen control system, if you want to use it, which I actually quite liked. I know people are finding it pretty tricky, and in fairness, some of the controls are a little bit difficult to master. For example, in order to direct one of your footballists in a given direction, you literally just put your finger on him and then drag him, and a little reticle will appear with a dotted line attached, and you can kind of pull him almost lasso style, going, come on, you bastard, and drag him in whichever direction you want him to run. If you then want to pass, you tap on a player, he passes to that player. If you want to do a sliding tackle when they're coming in, you swipe the screen just before he runs up to him, and he dives in there and does a two-footed Paul Scholes style, chops you down like a Scots pine.
Yeah, Paul Scholes is quite a current player, isn't he?
Well, yeah, look, I told you I don't know about football. These are things I've heard secondhand. All right.
Right.
Okay. I'm pretty sure he does tackles and that.
Yeah.
If you want to take a shot, you swipe across the screen, in a kind of curvy direction if you want to curve the ball and all that. It's very intuitive. It's very like I immediately picked up and went, yeah, I understand this. I'm a noob such as myself. And I started doing goals and that. And I was like, oh, this is actually quite good fun. No, it doesn't work perfectly because on the iPad, your players are pretty small and they're moving. So when you're trying to like grab a guy and you can very easily miss him by a couple of pixels, and then when you swipe to pull him in a direction, you just do a kick and you don't mean to.
Oh.
So there are issues with it. But I mean, fair play to them for actually trying something new rather than just rehashing the same old stuff. It's free to play, which is kind of interesting, but you're locked out of a lot of the content if you just don't pay anything. However, they have the option to unlock the content in a single in-app purchase. So the regular modes, like your tournament and I think online play and all that sort of stuff, if you pay £2.99 or $4.99, it just unlocks everything for you and away you go.
Now, that's, again, I think this is EA experimenting with the freemium thing. That's interesting because that's basically an extended demo, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And that's different to how they've done Plants vs. Zombies, for example, and other of their properties. So they are trying different things with different properties and seeing what works. This is more the model I'm in favor of, if I'm honest, where you can just play it for a bit and then if you like it, just cough up and there you go, it'll leave you alone afterwards. But if you're into football, you probably downloaded it already, and if you're on the fence, maybe try it if you sound like the sound of the new controls or whatever, so you can get that at this very moment. Another thing that we covered on the site a while back, it was a Kickstarter project originally that looked very, very beautiful, Buddy and Me, it's called. Mm-hmm. It's an endless runner, auto runner, in which you play a small child who dreams. In the beginning of the game, he's asleep, and then he kind of goes into a dream. He suddenly jumps out of his bedroom window and starts running through this forest environment. It's almost like he's on Endor, with all the wooden platforms that strung up between the trees. And following you, kind of in the background, is this flying creature that looks a little bit like the flying dragon thing from The Neverending Story, the fluffy one. Falcor, that's his name.
I've never seen that.
Even...
It sounded like it was quite a big investment, so I just thought.
Yes, yes, very good. No, it's the classic childhood film, whatever. It's like a flying fairy dragon thing, and it's zooming along in the background, and occasionally it swooshes into the foreground when there's a big gap between the platforms, and your kid jumps, and you jump on his back, and you ride on his back for a little bit, and it's all wonderful, and then you jump off again and carry on. I've played this again. It is looks great. Oddly choppy. Like, I'm running it on the new iPad, and it's a bit stuttery. And feels a lot slower than I thought it should be, which is a bit of a surprise. It looks beautiful. It's very, very charming, and it's not especially difficult. Kind of almost quite relaxing to play in some ways. And I say the art style is, you know, pretty. It's kind of inscrutable. It looks fantastic. But it is a bit stuttery, even on my, like, brand new top of the range iPad, so I'm not sure how it's going to run on an iPad 2 or something like that, so I guess approach with some caution. Maybe check out the reviews on the App Store just to see people using older devices, but it certainly looks good. It's sweet, I'd almost say, I suppose. But yeah, you can get that right now. It's £1.99 or $2.99. God, there's lots out this week. I think the last one that we'll mention is Shadowrun Returns. Have you seen this? Did you follow this Kickstarter?
No, I know what Shadowrun is. It's a sort of D20 based paper and pen
that's
RPG,
right.
Is that right?
Classic role-playing game that was also turned into a SNES game back in the day, Shadowrun.
Right.
What they've done is they did a Kickstarter for it, as they do with all vaguely nostalgic sort of 80s, 90s games now, and say we want to do a new version. And so they have. So they've basically done it up in new isometric stylies on the iPad. So it's sort of cyberpunk visuals, but you've also got more classic fantasy tropes like orcs and shamans and that sort of thing. You take on jobs, you chat people up, you level up your character, and you do fightings, lots of fightings.
Whoa.
In the isometric style. We haven't played much of it. Mark's had a go, and it says it's off to a promising start. Decent writing, fun combat. You are supposed to be able to make up missions and share them with other people. That's not available in this edition, which is a little bit of a shame. But if you do want to get it, it's a big old game, and it comes with a relatively big old price tag. It's £6.99 or $9.99. So you're going to have to cough up for it, but it may well be worth it. We'll have a review up very soon for that one, but you can find it right now if you like.
Come sit upon my throne of
Welcome, one and all, come inside and join us in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. It's just the two of us this week, so I'm going to ask Peter to ascend the steps to park his posterior upon the throne and tell us your stories of games past.
Oh, children, there was a game. So I've been playing on my Vita a lot because that's my job.
Hey! You've just like doubled the weekly demographics of Vita players.
Oh, you are cruel.
Just kidding.
And so I've been playing Dive Kick. It actually came out a couple of weeks ago, but we only just got a review code for it. So I decided to kind of bundle through that one.
Right.
And do you know, it's a very good fighting game. That is its own worst enemy, basically.
of fighting game?
So this is it. If you haven't been following Dive Kick, what you need to know is that there are essentially two input buttons, right? So there is dive, which is really jump, and kick. And the whole point of the game is that when you first take up fighting games, when you try and get into them, one of the tactics that most newbie players will try and do is just jump kick a lot, because it's quite effective, and like a lot of the Street Fighter 2 characters would have quite heavy priority in terms of their jump kick. So yeah, Ryu and
keep
Ken
spamming it, and you jump them into a corner and just keep pushing them down.
Absolutely. So it was kind of an in-joke, as far as I understand, that they wanted to make a game that was just about jump kicking people.
Right, okay.
And in doing so, in reducing the game down to this very small amount of moves, so there's jump, kick, and then if you hold both of the buttons together, you get a sort of special, and different characters have different specials.
Right.
In doing that, it's so easily understood because you aren't memorizing a ridiculous 20-string combo that Shaoyu's got, right?
Sure.
And you aren't dealing with Street Fighter 3's Just Defend, and you aren't dealing with, you know, all of these other additional complex systems that fighting games have because they have, like shmups, catered to an increasingly hardcore market.
Yeah.
And you do away with all of the bump that is just assumed of the players over 10 years. Like, oh, well, you know what a cross-up is, right? And it strips it right down to its bare essentials. And in doing so, because it's so easy, you actually get to the heart of what I feel video game pugilists actually love about the genre the most. And that is positional play, understanding and anticipating your opponent's moves, and high-level play, effectively.
I just like it when Ryu does one of them fireball things.
Well, so this is the thing, right? And so, like, I feel like you and I grew up at a time when the fighting game was something that you could sit down for a couple of hours and play with a friend on Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition or whatever and, like, have a good time. But you were doing it and, like, just, you know, beating the snot out of each other. But you got kind of bored. And as soon as one of you got better than the other, it was kind of over. Like, the fun isn't there anymore. As soon as you aren't very good at it in comparison to the person you're playing, you aren't enjoying yourself and you aren't learning. And because of that, you just feel like you're getting worse and worse and worse. And it's just no fun because everybody likes to win sometimes.
You get left behind. And it was always a dangerous thing. If you make it so that noobs can come in and just kick your ass by, like, randomly spamming buttons or button bashing.
Yeah.
Then people say that's a bad thing. That's, like, you know, clearly a problem with the game design because you shouldn't be able to beat me. But it obviously opens the door for new people to think, oh, I could enjoy this. It'd be quite good. Whereas if it's purely, like, based on you have to learn the 10-hit combo, obviously that rewards the skilled player, but it throws up a massive brick wall for anyone else trying to get in.
Yeah, because the barrier of entry is so high. I think people experienced this with Street Fighter 4, where there was a whole wave of people who went, oh, Street Fighter's back, oh, brilliant, I'm totally going to get into that. And then they realized that, no, wait a second, you need to put like 20 hours into a fighting game to go, oh, I get this now. And that's like pretty much every type of game, you know, your Blaze Blues, your Guilty Gears, your Street Fighters, your King of Fighters, you know, all of these, they all have their differences and you need to put a whole bunch of time into them. But Dive Kick does away with all of that and puts it onto two buttons, right, and is therefore really, really exciting in that you know, you can experience that high level stuff. And it is really, really exciting to try and outwit your opponent.
Sure.
The reason that it's its own enemy is because it's a Kickstarter project, or it was a Kickstarter project, and it assumes that every single person playing it has been following Dive Kick since day one, / works at Iron Galaxy, right?
Oh.
So, do you know who Marman is?
No. Should I?
No, because it's not your scene, right? Like, so basically, there's this one character, and he keeps talking about his controller and how he's going to take over the world. And you're playing it on Vita, and you're thinking, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I had to do a whole bunch of research on this game, and it turns out that there is a dedicated two-button controller.
Okay.
Right? So there's a dedicated two-button controller for it. You can't get it on Vita, and it's a reference that not everybody's going to get if they just pick it up. Mm. And there's a couple of American journalists in the backgrounds of some of the games, like, who are quite clearly more detailed than other character, like, people in the background, and it's like,
it's a bit weird.
And it looks like a Flash game, right? So it has this feeling of being amateurish. Because of that, it really bent my nose out of shape, because I wanted to be a part of it, and in its reduction of the fighting game to this really, really simple construct, it is very open and very welcoming, but in being so referential and so steeped in its own Kickstarter / fighting game history, it closes the door on the exact same group of people who would benefit the most from actually playing it.
Yeah.
That said, if you have any interest in knowing what it's like to enjoy fighting games on the level that I love fighting games, it's so worth playing just to kind of get it. You know, it's one of those games that you would play in addition to something else at the same time. Like, go and get Blaze Blue and go and get this.
How much is it? I presume it's a DLC thing.
Yeah, it's DLC, so it's like six, seven quid.
Okay, odd one. All right, and well, nice to hear some news about Vita. Just the fact that it still exists is brings warm feelings to my heart.
Boo!
What?
Boo!
I'm being positive, man. That wasn't ironic.
It's do you know? I was looking back on all the games that I played, and admittedly, I'm a handheld editor, but yeah. Like, there are some absolute corkers on Vita, and increasingly 3DS. Actually, 3DS has become the console that you go, oh, if I'm going to get a Nintendo console, I'm totally going to get a 3DS.
Yeah, not a Wii U, 3DS.
No, I ain't going to get that. But 3DS.
I want some games and stuff.
Bloody hell,
yeah, amazing. I will get hold of one. Excellent. Well, thanks for that. Do feel free to hop off and I'll jump on. Because I've been playing Riddick.
Ooh.
The Merc Files.
Tell me all about it.
Well, Riddick is a funny franchise because it kind of inverts the formula regarding video game adaptions of movies. Usually, as we all know, if you make a video game of a movie, it's crap. So anyone tries to do a film tie-in, as we know, Street Fighter the movie is a pretty good example of that one, where they reskin Street Fighter with the cut-out versions of the characters. You could play as Kylie Minogue.
That was amazing.
It was so good. It was amazing. And, I'm not even going to name them, because pretty much every single movie franchise that comes to consoles or comes to a video game turns out to be rubbish. They don't do a very good job of it. They usually rush bodge jobs just to release so it comes out the same time as the movie, and it's kind of crap. With the one exception being Riddick. So they did the first film, Pitch Black, which was all right, fine. B-movie, horror, fair, it was okay. Then they decided, or rather Vin Diesel decided, that his character was amazing and that he needed an entire saga to himself.
Yeah.
And so they launched The Chronicles of Riddick, which was going to be like two or three parts and ended up being one part because it was massively overblown and crap. And so everyone's like, oh, for God's sake, this is balls. However, there was a tie-in video game that was released, I think, just before it, called Escape from Butcher's Bay, or Butcher Bay.
Butcher Bay, yeah.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
Like, really good. It was kind of a first-person thing, but it used stealth dynamics as well, because the character's all about having funny eyes who sees in the dark, so you're doing lots of running around and hiding in the shadows and jumping out of people and crawling around, but there was also this kind of good combat that was mixed in as well. And it was a really good game in its own right that kicked the ass out of its movie tie-in. So it was with sort of a tentative amount of, you know, hope that I picked up Riddick the Merc Files, which is the tie-in for the new Riddick movie, which has just come out, which I understand Vin Diesel mortgaged his house to finance, because that's how much the public wanted to see it. Apparently it's all right, whatever. So what they've done for iOS is a stealth game, which is good news, cause I like stealth stuff. It's done in an isometric view. And it involves Mr. Riddick sneaking around a bunch of environments, trying to evade enemies and get to an exit. That's the bare bones of it. So it's usually just these single environments with a bunch of different rooms, and you have to find the correct way through without alerting guards or getting shot in the face.
Mm-hmm.
On the plus side, looks all right. The stealth stuff is fun when it works. So you're going from shadow to shadow. That's always entertaining. If you can do it without getting caught, that's the thrill. That's the big kind of rush of it all. It's the same thing with us playing The Last of Us. If I get into a fight in The Last of Us, I feel like I've failed. Like, the best way to play it is to play so nobody ever sees you. And that's the real sort of rush of satisfaction. Same thing here. When you go from shadow to shadow and you're avoiding the people and you memorize the patterns of their movements so you can find the perfect window to zoom through and get to the exit, that's great. That works really nicely. And it's actually kind of good fun. On the downside, the AI seems to be a bit compromised, in as much as very often enemies will crash into each other or start to ape each other's roots. So they'll like walk over each other's toes and then they'll all start walking in the same direction. It's like, I'm pretty sure that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And then you've got some weird like graphical glitches. Like there's a pinch to zoom option which shows you the whole map and will isolate the exit. So it shows you where the exit is. When you zoom in and zoom out, it's incredibly jerky, like jarringly so. So you try and pinch in and it just goes like from a close tight view. And then there's a frame of of zooming out and then another frame where it's fully zoomed out. Again, pretty sure that's not supposed to happen. And I've had some weird instances where I'm hiding in a shadow and a guy just walks up and is staring at me in the face and doesn't move like he spotted me. But he doesn't open fire either. He just stands there. And so I go, all right, then I tap him and I take him down. And it's like, it seems a bit buggy, seems a bit glitchy. When it's working, it's fun. And it does that system whereby you retry missions with different objectives. So usually it's you start off with a kind of just get to the exit kind of objective. So you stealth your way through. Then you can go back and try it again. And you have to assassinate a specific guard. So you have to go in and either, you know, sneak up behind him and snap his neck or whatever. You can also pick up weapons and fire, but like I say, that's not the ideal way to play it. So there are other options to go back and explore the same maps, which games are doing a lot now. You could argue it's padding, or you could argue it's a nice way to kind of go through the game again with different goals. So you're exploring a different style of gameplay. Depends which way you look at it. It's okay. When it's working, I like it. And I like the stealth aspect, and you know it works well within this franchise. But I think it's got a few too many issues to give it a proper kind of recommendation.
Is it better or worse than Wheelman?
Well, I haven't played Wheelman.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
Because it's Jake. Wheelman. I'm not going to even pretend that it's a kitsch and cool thing to like Wheelman, because clearly it's balls.
Do you know what? You need to wrap this show up because I'm upset. I'm upset now.
All right, then. This is the last Pocket Gamer podcast. You're here. Keith will be taking over next week because Peter and I will be squabbling like little girls. But thanks for listening anyway. Come and join us next week. There'll be more people, more games, more of everything you like to hear from the PG podcast. Thanks ever so much for listening, and join us next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.